Afternoon, the House Education Committee for Wednesday, June 1st is called to order. We will begin with Senate Bill 342, then we'll go to Senate Bill 48, and then we'll go to Senate Bill 52A. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 342. Mr. Keller, would you give us some information, please? Thank you.
Senate Bill 342A requires community colleges and state institutions and OUS to operate a statewide articulation and transfer system. Requires community colleges and state institutions to continue to provide and improve effective articulation and transfer framework by completing specific tasks. Allows community colleges and state institutions in OUS to implement other measures to create an effective articulation and transfer framework for students. Requires OUS and community colleges and workforce development to submit a report on their progress to the emergency board before January 1st, 2007. Requires OUS and community colleges and workforce development to report annually to the joint boards of education on their progress. Sunset provision of the measure on January 2nd, 2010 declares an emergency effective on passage and has a subsequent referral to the committee on budget. I've also attached an email I received from the community colleges and workforce development regarding the fiscal. There is also the vote on the Senate side and the fiscal impact that was issued.
Thank you. Andrea Henderson, please. And Ms. Henderson, as you present to us, perhaps you could also give us the evolution as the bill was amended in the Senate and brought forward.
Certainly. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association, which represents the 17 community colleges in Oregon. I'm here to testify in support of this bill today. We think this is an important next step in making sure that the transfer of our students both to and from community colleges and to universities is successful in the state of Oregon. To give you a little bit of history, this is actually an issue that the work began in this last interim with Dr. Gretchen Schutte, who's the president of Chemeketa Community College, chaired a group which has been known as More Better Faster to take a look at how to move students through the system in a much more timely, effective manner. The work of that group came up with the Oregon Transfer Module, which is a mechanism to allow students to take a portion of their lower division transfer in a very concrete chunk that they can then transfer without question to the university system. What this bill does, with the amendments to the original bill, is to essentially lay out many of the next steps to continue the work on the transfer issue. The bill, as was originally introduced, created a common course numbering system for the different courses at various institutions. And we think this approach, as it was amended in the Senate, is a will have a greater impact on students and will help them as they move through the system. There was a report that just came out this morning on the national level that indicated that 59% of the recent students graduating with a baccalaureate got some of their credits from at least one other institution, which really shows what we have long suspected, that students are moving around a lot more than they used to. Students may take classes at a community college, go to a university, maybe go back to a community college, go to a different community college. Students tend to move around to whatever fits their schedule, their lifestyle, their pocketbook, whatever the case may be. And really the intent of this is to make sure as students do that, that all of the various institutions recognize those needs of students and that transfer is as easy as possible. This bill lays out fairly some very specific items that will be worked on in this next interim, including looking at a revision of the current Associates of Arts transfer degree and making recommendations for revisions of that. Secondly, we'll look at very specific statewide degree pathways and make recommendations. And third, we'll look at outcomes-based articulation and transfer systems that will focus on the skills and knowledge that students need to actually meet the general education requirements. The last element is the adoption of a course applicability system, which is known by the acronym of CAS. And this system essentially is an online system that will help students to be able to go to a computer and take a look at the coursework that they have completed and match up how that course will meet the various requirements of various programs in specific institutions. That specific requirement does have a fiscal impact in that the software will need to be purchased for that. There currently is not any funding associated with the bill. The other items may also have some funding impacts on the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, just in terms of staff time to get this done. However, we do feel this is a very important issue. This really is about making it work for our students and are very supportive of this legislation. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions for Ms. Henderson? Representative Rowland.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The concern I have, and having seen it, and I guess, can you tell me the percentage of courses now that don't transfer? I mean, is this a big problem from community college to transfer to four-year schools with students?
Madam Chair, Representative Rowland, I don't have any very specific statistics that can tell you exactly how much of a problem it is. We do hear anecdotes. We do know that most students transfer successfully, that there are always those students who, for whatever reason, have changed majors, have taken professional technical courses, that have not had as positive an experience as they would like to. And essentially, because they are paying for those courses, it becomes an economic issue for those students as well. We think the system works fairly well now, but there is room for improvement, and we want to make sure we're making that improvement.
Follow up. Thank you. Clearly, though, there will be courses that are those below the 100 level classes, that students will always know that they will not be transferable. Is that? That would still be the case with this.
Okay. And Chair Strobland, there will always be some classes which will not transfer. If it's a professional technical, a welding class, for example, it may not transfer. And those below the 100 level, which are remedial in nature, aren't college level work and will not transfer.
Further questions?
Chair.
Representative Lundy.
Yes, this is working only within our state or consider also international students coming to our institution here.
Madam Chair, Representative Lim, the focus at this point really is on students within this state, and particularly between the community college system and the Oregon University system.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Henderson, just to bring you forward, I did speak with both Representative Scott and Senator Schrader, and they are both amenable to including as a reporting entity during the interim, not only to the E-Board and the Joint Boards of Education, but the House Interim Education Committee. So we'll be offering that amendment and bringing it back for approval Friday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Was there anyone else who was interested in testifying in Senate Bill 342? I had no one else signed up.
Good afternoon. For the record, Cam Corey Sprawley, I'm the Commissioner for Community Colleges. And since your administrator is in receipt of an email from me yesterday when I was noted that this bill was going to be heard, we had read the language of the department and the university system shall require by January 1st of 2007 as a critical piece of work that we likely could not do with the current work load that we have. I have been in conversation with the Legislative Fiscal Office. We have discussed it. Their read is that we shall bring a report on our progress about the require under that shall, and there is not an expectation that we will have completed all of it. And as Ms. Henderson indicated, we were particularly concerned about the CAS system, which we currently don't have the resources for. It does exist in the state. We are very interested in it, and we may very well bring back to the Emergency Board and the Substantive Committee in our report in January, just what we think we will need financially in order to accomplish the whole of this bill, but we are now comfortable that we can provide you the reporting that's necessary within our current budget. So I wanted to make sure that that was on the record.
Thank you, appreciate it. And I think that the CAS fourth application system,
that means applicability.
It's
yes.
A applicability system. Uh-huh. It's a very important piece of that, and probably Representative Dahlem would be interested in helping make that happen as well. So,
excellent.
Very much so.
Thank you.
Any questions for Ms. Solly? Thank you very much. Well, then we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 342. We'll be back. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 48. Mr. Teller.
Senate Bill 48 removes the statutory time period that American Indian Languages teaching licenses are valid, makes technical changes to statutes relating to teacher administrative licenses. In the body of my staff member summary, I reversed the spelling of endorsement, and I will correct that when I do the final. But Representative Lim was kind enough to point that out to me privately.
But now that it's public humiliation, have at it.
And we do not have a subsequent referral.
Thank you very much. We have Keith Mink, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Keith Mink. I am the Deputy Executive Director for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I did provide some written testimony, and instead of reading the written testimony and going through it step by step, I'd like to highlight three which we believe are important changes to the bill. The remaining ones are primarily housekeeping. On Section 1, and that's the first page of the written testimony, we are recommending, based on Legislative Council's recommendation to us, that we change the word shall to may on line 23. The background on that is that currently if a person walks in on a... the law allows TSPC to issue licenses within 2 days of application. And as a person comes in with a completed application, the language currently says we shall do it. This compels us at times to issue the license, and we may discover during the course of our evaluation that we do within those 2 days, there may be issues that we need to research from out of state. There may be some issues around testing that we need to take a look at. And so by changing the word from shall to may, it gives us some flexibility to perhaps do a more thorough evaluation and get the information we need, as an example, from out-of-state information to make sure that we're not issuing a license to a person who should not be in the classroom. On Section 3, currently, that's on expedited service. Currently, only school employers are allowed to request an expedited service, which is a request that we process a license in outside of our normal process. We'd like to change that to where an individual can request expedited service. We have numerous requests for folks who want a teaching license as they head overseas to teach, and having to wait through the required normal process really puts them at an extreme disadvantage. So by changing it to not only school employers but allowing individuals to do this, we'll be able to serve some of our individuals who are coming out of our programs wishing to get a license as they head off to be employed. The last section that I'd like to bring your attention to is Section 8. That's on page 2 of the written testimony. This basically relates to another bill that I believe you will be looking at this afternoon. It removes teachers whose licenses have been suspended for failure to give 60 days notice pursuant to an Oregon statute from the annual nationally published discipline list, which is called the NASDAQ list. If a person leaves employment within 60 days, school districts can approach TSPC and ask us to suspend their license. currently the legislature says that we are supposed to put that educator, regardless of what the situation is, on that list. And as other states look at whether or not they should license individuals, they refer to that list. We do, to see if any individual wanting a license in Oregon may have issues in another state. This, because of sometimes the circumstances, really is somewhat unfair to individuals. This just allows us, that doesn't mandate us to put individuals on that list if they leave within 60 days.
Open to questions?
Please.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Mink, Representative Oakland?
On the 60-day ones, districts don't have to request that. I mean, if they could, the teacher could have come to them with less than 60 days and had a story and explained the situation. And the school district doesn't need to request that you pull their report right now. So right now, that making that decision is up to the local school district. Is that not true?
Madam Chair, Representative Roblin, that is correct.
Follow up. So what's happening with this bill is it's taking that kind of away from the district and putting it on your shoulders to make the decision as to whether or not the person did things appropriately in leaving?
Madam Chair, Representative Rowland, the decision is still with the school districts to decide whether they report it to us or not. We still process it. We'll process it in the normal manner that we do, which may result in their license being suspended. It just will not automatically compel us to put them on that national list.
Representative Dahl.
When a person goes to the national list, and or when you go to the national list and read another state's listings, because there is a probability of a satisfactory reason for being there, do you check them anyway?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, we do check them anyway, just to make sure. It's one of the things that we do when we look at licensing someone. If a person's name appears on the national list, we do want to have the ability to look at it to find out why they're there. This amendment that we are suggesting doesn't preclude us from doing that and putting them on the list. It just allows us to, once we've heard the reason why, make the determination of whether or not they should be on that list.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You're very patient with me. I'm wondering why we wouldn't want to continue that practice. And wouldn't the school district go through their state agency or on their own pursue that information? Also, it seems to me if a person has left employment within 60 days, even if there is good reason, a hiring district should be cued to that or should know that. Death in the family, a whole host of reasons are certainly satisfactory, but when you're hiring, the district process is fairly exhaustive. I'd rather have it there and straighten it out than not have it there and find out later, would be my preference.
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, I'm not quite sure how to respond to that.
Let me put that in a question. Okay. Let me be Alex Trebek here and put that in.
All right.
If I'm looking to hire a candidate and their name is on the national list, and there is good reason for it to be there, in doing diligence, won't most districts find out why the name is on the list?
Madam Chair, Representative Dahlem, yes, they should, as they should also follow up with reference checks. Part of this change in Senate Bill 48 relates to another bill that will be considered later relating to the whole process. School districts can choose to report to us or not report to us. Then it begins a whole process, due process, that we give the educator an opportunity to present their side of the story. But in that process, we're still obligated to basically notify that the National Register, and sometimes it takes a very long time to do that. And so there could be arguments on both sides of what is an appropriate course of action as far as listing someone. It's our belief that school districts use good judgment in the ones that they report to us. We do feel, though, as we work through the process, it would be advantageous for a number of individuals not to have us compelled to put them on that registry. And that doesn't mean that we, in our decision-making of this, would prevent folks or put not put folks who should not be in the classroom on the registry. But, and so this gives us some flexibility. But I do feel that if an individual is under consideration for some reason that they left, there is opportunities within this state for folks to find out on what their background is and what is happening.
I'm searching for where do I want that process centered.
What your follow-up question is?
Yes, thank you. Okay. TSPC or the local district? It would seem to me that the local district generally ends up making a fairly decent decision, and they do rather exhaustive work. I think I would want this process centered at home. I think is where I would want it centered, rather than in a far-flung state office. I would want to be cued from them, but not managed by them.
Further questions? Comments? Thank you very much, Mr. Mink. Anyone else that wish to testify on Senate Bill 48? Heading up here? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Ann Darby, and I'm with the Oregon Education Association. And I just, based on the discussion, I just thought I would come and offer myself up for some questions, but also point out to that part of the reason for this bill is that while there is some flexibility for school districts to report these kinds of issues when a educator leaves, you know, within 60 days or not, you know, they have the ability to take into account some of that. There is a lot of discrepancy between school districts, and some school districts, there have been a few reported cases where maybe some personality issues were involved on a reason that was otherwise legitimate for someone else. And this just gives the educator an opportunity to make their case to one more body. The hearing officer panel that has been in place before, it has proved to be cumbersome and expensive, and in terms of an appeals process. And this makes it a little bit, should expedite it so that we get a fast decision. It allows for when there is a legitimate reason. Sometimes they're not, but most, and I think usually when they're not, there is no appeal. At another hearing, and I thought it was in front of this committee, have we heard this bill here before?
No, ma'am.
No, I'm sorry. Okay. In the Senate committee, Ms. Chamberlain offered up a chart that showed the number of cases that had taken place in front of TSPC on this issue, and most of them were not appealed. There were only a few instances where there was an appeal, and part of the problem that they had was just that the process that took place in front of the hearings officer panel, it took too long for there to be a resolution within the time frame that was helpful to school districts and to the employee. And the national disciplinary list, as Mr. Mink pointed out, it's useful and if school districts follow up, but where there is no follow-up, just like on references, then somebody can have a black mark on their record for what most folks would consider an otherwise legitimate reason. And once it is reported, then they do have, there is no discretion on whether it's something that should be put on the national disciplinary list. Does it fall into the same category as every other offense that makes it worth it to allow other states access to that same information and to
go with the teacher wherever they move to. So just another perspective on this, and happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Ms. Darty? Representative Roblin.
So is it also not, it's also possible that they can lose their license in Oregon for leaving 60 days early. Is that true? My belief is that is the case.
Is that true? Yes. I'll look to the back of the room here. I was, they all sort of looked at me.
And my understanding, that also comes from the district. A request from the district to have that removed by TSPC to lose the license. So I guess my concern is if this is a may, and that becomes a may. So if a district really feels strong that this person should lose their license because of the untimeliness of it, you know, the day before school starts, they let somebody know that they're not going to be there, and they report it to TSPC, does that give them the shall there as well?
I'm sorry, I'm not following the shall may conversation.
Is that the end?
Can I ask for some help from the back of the room? maybe Mr. Green. Yes, I need a... I can have a link from TSPC and OSBA. That would be helpful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association, and Representative Roblin, I think that's the next bill on the agenda.
Okay.
If a district does report, and that's their choice to report whether, in fact, an educator has not given the 60-day notice, that's their decision. Once they report it to TSPC, and you'll hear in Senate Bill 52, I think, from Mr. Jenks here in a moment, that TSPC currently has the ability to remove that license, but the educator also has the ability to appeal that decision. And that goes to a hearings officer panel, which is the discussion of Senate Bill 52, which kind of lengthens out the process. But right now it's a may at the school districts, and we can get into Senate Bill 52 in a moment, and we can talk about the amendments that were made there.
Okay.
Mr. May.
If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Roland, an answer to, I think, to your question is if a person leaves the school district the day before classes start and the school district reports it, the normal process still is pursued, except for what we're recommending in 48, is that if we go through the process and find that it's not justified, person leaving, then we take the action on the license. We still can put the person on that national directory. It just doesn't necessarily compel us to do that. And so part of it gives us a little bit of some jurisdiction in working through the process with the school district and the educator to make sure that the reason is legitimate and that the suspension of the license or the removal of the license is for a legitimate reason.
Okay, then. Thank you very much. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 48. We will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 52. Mr. Kelly?
Senate Bill 52A allows the Teachers, Standards, and Practices Commission to conduct hearings rather than the Office of Administrative Hearings for license suspension related to teacher resigning without 60 days written notice. And this does not have a subsequent referral.
Well, you shouldn't have sat down, Pilgrim. Mr. Mank. I'm sorry, that was pretty pathetic, wasn't it?
Good afternoon once again. For the record, my name is Keith Mink. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and I'm here to speak in support of Senate Bill 52A engrossed. And specifically what this bill deals with is the administrative process, the due process that we afford educators. Currently, as we've been discussing on the previous bill, that if a person leaves before the 60 days is up, then and it is reported to us, we then can take action on their license. An educator has the right to due process, and at this point they would request a hearing. We currently are required to refer these to the Office of Administrative Hearings to go through a hearing process. That process, because of the use of that office, can be over a very extended period of time. Conceivably, if this happens, where a person leaves the day before school starts, and it's reported to us and a person requests a hearing, it may be spring before this is actually heard. And during that time, we are we do not take any action on the license. So to expedite this process and yet give a valid due process to the educator, this Senate bill is requesting that the process be changed to where these hearings are not referred to the Office of Administrative Hearings, but are rather referred to our commission for hearings, where we then would conduct a hearing. The individual would have the ability to have representation by legal counsel, and the commission then would make a determination on the findings coming out of that hearing. Open to any questions.
Questions for Mr. Mink. So, Mr. Mink, in referring this rather than to the Office Administrative Hearings for to be assigned to an administrative law judge, you're transferring those duties and functions to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Is that expanding the scope and authority of the TSPC?
Madam Chairman, I do not believe that it does.
Do you currently conduct these types of administrative hearings?
Madam Chair, the Commission does currently conduct hearings on a variety of different issues as it relates to discipline.
And licensure.
Mm-hmm.
And licensure, just so that's clear on the record.
Madam Chair, Representative Rowland, that is correct on licensure.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you very much. I think you're done.
Thank you.
We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 52 and open a work session on Senate Bill 52.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 52A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shields has moved Senate Bill 52A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
No, there are more questions.
Representative Lynn.
Yes, and maybe I should ask before a work session, but how many instances that has been in the past that they were not able to give a 60 days notice?
That's a good question, Mr. Mee. Or does someone have information? The question is, how many instances have there been in the past where someone has failed to give 60 days
yes.
notice? There was obviously a lot of information that we obviously didn't get.
Yes, I'm sorry. Chair Flores, members of the committee, Beth Ann Darby with OEA, Representative Lim, in answer to your question, I don't remember the exact number, but it was, I would say less than 20 was the chart that Ms. Chamberlain from Teacher Standards and Practices Commission at some point in this process put forward. And I believe there were only four or five that were appealed of that 20. It was a very small number, and I believe the chart was probably within the last 5 years or something. She tried to show that it was something that doesn't really happen all that often. Was
okay.
her point?
And Madam Chair,
and I believe we
could
get a copy of that in the record somewhere.
Okay, and then do they simply didn't know about the 60-day notice, or it was a willful just that? Sure. Action by the teachers.
Chair Flores, Representative Lim, I believe that the 60-day notice is part of most collective bargaining agreements and contracts. That sometimes there are reasons, as Representative Dahlem referenced, there could be a death in the family. One family member may move, and a reason, that might be a reason that somebody might have to give less than 60 days. Sometimes they're very legitimate reasons in the scale of life, and sometimes they're not. But I think that for the most part, people do fulfill the 60-day obligation. There's just these handful of cases where the process has proved to be cumbersome and expensive for TSPC and has not provided answers for employees on the disposition of the matter.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Shields?
Yes, Madam Chair. Your request, in light of what John has brought up, I would rescind that motion, and we can take it up on Friday if the Chair would prefer.
The motion?
I'm comfortable.
I think there's a little bit more information that I would like to see as well, in regard to even some of the information that might have been provided on the charts that we don't have the benefit of, which was obviously presented on the Senate side.
Okay.
That might just fill in for our information so that we have a decision to make good public policy. Yeah. So we'll, the motion has been made to rescind the motion to move this to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there, and it's non-debatable, any objection? So moved. Then, Mr. Keller, if you would contact the appropriate parties, we'd like to see a little bit more information. Mr. Mink, thank you very much. I would appreciate it. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 52. There being no further business to come before the committee, I just want to comment, when this room is relatively empty and when there are certain parties sitting in the back going like this, have you listened to let me see, what is it, 860 and the bobblehead guy? It's fascinating. We will stand adjourned. Thank you.